good?
We're ready to start.
Are you today, Brian?
What time, well, 10 minutes, 5 minutes?
Student comes, I'll see if he could do something else in the next room so he won't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just tell me how you feel that.
Did you hear traffic probably coming?
It was horrible. They're having the UN conference right now.
But you know,
I didn't know that.
Did you come by way of the East Side Drive?
We came, no, West Side Highway area.
Oh yeah, well, I tell you, whether it's East Side or West Side, it's always that.
Is it always like that?
It's terrible.
I don't know what it is. I think it's just the way it somehow happens to.
So you came in from where? From Boss?
From Rhode Island.
Oh, from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Just to help me out. Isn't that very dedicated?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, this is an honor for me. This is
her train was delayed.
Oh.
Well, apparently they're redoing the tracks because you're going to have this high-speed train coming through. So you think they'd be able to plan and let you know it's going to come in an hour later than they say?
Oh, gosh.
But they didn't, so.
Oh.
So that's kind of.
So how long does it take, though, from Rhode Island to here?
It should take 3.5. It took about a little over 4.5.
Oh.
So.
It's amazing.
So you're a filmmaker or a video person? Or?
No, I've done a lot of oral histories. I've done Issei women in Hawaii, and I was at Berkeley, and then my family's from Kohala in Hawaii, and then
Oh, you're from Hawaii?
Uh-huh.
Oh. Yeah.
She's related to Senator Danny Noy.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
She just saw him last month.
I just saw him last month. I took my daughter to D.C. And
are you part Japanese?
Yeah, my whole family. I'm the first generation mixed Hapa, whatever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, I know a Kohala family. Would you know Sally? She was Kirita.
Kirita, I don't. I'll ask my mom. My parents were Sugiyama.
Sugiyama.
Sugiyama. And my grandma was the. My grandpa was the chief of police in Kohala, and grandma was the postmistress.
Oh, really?
And then we've got the dentist and the other uncle that. Has the music movie theater.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah.
And so your mother or your family is a Sugiyama?
Mm-hmm. My family, all the way through my mom, yeah.
You're a Sugiyama too?
No, my mom married a man she met at Pomona College. She was the first one to leave Hawaii and come to mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but unfortunately he died when they were still in college, when she was still pregnant with me.
Really? So, that her husband died?
Yeah, they were both seniors in college. In fact, he died on my sister's first birthday. And my mother was 7 months pregnant with me, and they were seniors. They were 21, and he was in a car accident. I never knew my haole, my white half, because his family didn't really participate after that. So I only knew my Japanese side, you know, from Hawaii.
And you lived in Kohala, or no?
We lived in Honolulu for a while, but my mom was a single mom raising two kids, and it's just too expensive.
Wow!
So she
older sister.
Oh, certainly.
Where is that?
Oh, see that white book right there? It's the third one down. No. There.
This one.
Yeah. And if there's a pen, there's a pen somewhere.
I had one a second ago.
Oh, put your. Yeah. I don't think you have. Did you sign it way before?
Yes, I did.
Oh, yeah. We can do this after, maybe.
Yeah,
when the student comes and you're
just don't forget.
Remember. I will. I won't.
Oh, somebody's watch is there.
Yeah, mine's
not forgetting.
Forget
it. Oh, yeah. So, wait, where did you grow up then?
Berkeley.
Berkeley.
Mostly in Berkeley. But as a single mom and a school teacher, you know, it was hard raising two kids, yeah? And two mixed
races. So what was her last name then?
Well, it was Sugiyama, and then her after she married, and my last name is Mengel.
Mengel?
Uh-huh.
Mengel. So uh-huh. her name was Mengel.
Yeah.
Did she use Mengel or Sugiyama?
She kept Mengel.
Mengel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody knows those Sugiyamas in Hawaii.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, so jeez. So it was hard. She was in...
Your mom. Then and she never remarried. She was so young that...
Mm-hmm. Never remarried.
She never remarried, and she brought up the two of you.
Brought up the two of us. She's still a school teacher in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Pomona was hard for her because she's single parent and mixed race kids. Mm-hmm. And Hawaii was too expensive, so she moved to some place that she felt would be more tolerant. So we moved to Berkeley in 68, right in the middle of everything.
Well, it's a good thing you moved to Berkeley. Don't you think Hawaii would have been difficult for you, or no? Even though Hawaii is so mixed, yet mm-hmm. Kohala, I mm-hmm. don't know if Kohala is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been different, but we went to Hawaii 3 months out of the year. Because as a single mom, she needed help. So for summers, we would spend the summers with my grandma in Kohala.
Oh,
uh-huh.
So wait, your name is Lori?
Lori, uh-huh.
L-O-R.
L-A-U-R-I-E.
Oh, L-A-U-R-I-E, uh-huh. Lori.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll leave you my name and number before I leave.
Yeah, please, if you could put it in there.
Okay. Yeah.
And you live in Rhode Island?
Yeah, I just got a fellowship to do my doctorate at Brown.
Oh, so. And in what field?
American Civ. This is what
in
I do.
American
civilizations.
Uh-huh.
I do Asian American studies and particularly Issei and Issei women's histories.
Mm-hmm. Do most Asian Americans...
But you're interviewing me and we don't have time to talk and interview you.
Yeah, no, it's too bad. I wish we had time to
I'd
talk.
I'd love
yeah.
to. Well, maybe when you get back, I can come back and help Ron.
Oh, yeah.
If I do mm-hmm. a good job. Whatever.
I
but.
Think that'd be nice.
Okay.
Very, thank you very much for meeting with us today. I know how very difficult you're
talking. You know, in a couple of days.
You're going to be leaving for California, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to be gone until October 10th.
Yeah, so I'll only be gone a few days. But then,
well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because people need you here.
No. They're having a reunion kind of thing because the day after I speak, well then, Nobuko,
yes.
Chris, and Charlie are doing a reunion concert. In Berkeley.
Oh, so this is a concert you're actually attending?
No,
part of it.
The day before at San Francisco State, there's going to be a discussion or something by the African American, Asian American roundtable. So, but it's back to back, a day apart.
Oh, there are two conferences you're
attending. No, mine isn't a conference. Neither are conferences. I don't think. The one I'm going to is really, I think they're awarding something to young Asian Americans who are doing something worthwhile in their community. So I'm going to that, and then the next day I'll be going to hear Nobuko, Charlie, and Chris, you know, sing. Yeah, they haven't sung, the three of them together for quite a while.
So you
okay.
spend,
yeah.
okay. I hope that's not going to bother you.
No.
Today we're here at Gary Kochiyama's house, and we have a microphone here. So
well, wait a minute, you aren't doing this now, are you?
I'm actually starting, or if that's fine with you.
Oh, all right.
We
I didn't know
we
you
could
were doing
it. We could
start
all over. I'm just doing a sound check right now.
Oh, okay. I didn't
so
know you were
I hope,
doing it.
Would you like this edited out? Because we're going to go through transcripts, and we're going to come through and figure out what portions are for public display and public concern. So
oh, okay.
once I start... So we're going to edit out pieces that are not necessary.
Okay, good.
Is that fine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I don't need to even look at the notes.
Please do.
Well,
I have a
okay.
feeling that we may not be able to cover as much as we thought we would, and I have to apologize for the time. So.
Oh, that's right. Then we better
get started.
But I'm terrible at this kind of stuff.
Really?
Yes, I am.
I promise not to make it too draining on your time.
No,
and your energy.
That's right. We'll just...
Where would you like to start?
Well, I think just as you...
In the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay. Today we're here with Yuri Kochiyama. And Yuri, thank you very much for inviting us to come here during your valuable time. That's so precious. And your back-to-back schedule is very instrumentally tough to follow with for many of us. And so I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm Ron Uba of the Japanese American Citizens League. I'm the chapter president and an oral history project manager. I'm also here with Lori Menge.
Hi.
Mangle?
Mangle.
And Lori has been very kind enough. She's a PhD student studying at Brown University. She's from Hawaii. And so we're very kind to have her be with us today, too. So she's very generous in her time.
Okay. Thank you both for coming.
Well, thank you, Mary. Today is the 26th, and it's already September 1997.
Yes. I know.
And this is for the Japanese American Citizens League and Columbia University Oral History Collaboration. Parts of the oral history will be actually kept at the Oral History Archives, there at the Oral History Department, for you to use anytime you like, and for you to be able to access for your relatives and friends whenever they need to.
Okay.
Parts of the excerpts from this, with your permission, will be used at Ellis Island for the Japanese American National Museum, with Gary Kawaguchi, Karen Ishizuka, and also with parts of it to be used with the Japanese American Citizens League story about how you became part of our organization, JA of the Biennium, for this past year.
Okay.
We're very proud to have you in our chair. Yuri, could you tell us basically how your father ended up coming here to the Americas?
Well, I think my father came around 1911, and I think he was in fishing at that time. And he stayed, I think, till about 1917, and then went back to Japan to get married or bring back a wife.
So would you consider that a picture bride at the time?
In a way. I mean, not a...
Was it arranged?
Yeah, well, it was arranged marriage, of course, but I don't know if you'd call it a picture bride, because it wasn't, you know, like sending a picture over there and she was looking at it. I think they were introduced, you know, over there.
I see. And your mother, how did she come
well,
to
she met him. She met him. And then I guess the two agreed and decided then that they would get married and share their life.
Did they like each other when they first met?
Well, of course, none of us kids were there. I don't know, but I think from what we have seen of their marriage, it was a happy marriage.
That's very good. So you have basically been to Japan where your parents basically came from, or have you had a chance?
Well, I think I was 3 or 4. We did go back there to visit once.
I see. They came for better opportunities, would you say?
Oh, yeah.
That was
I think
a major
so.
Reason? Your father was a fisherman. Did he have his own boat?
No. I'm not sure exactly what he did in fishing, although when he came back, he started a fish market, which is a little bit different from going out and fishing. Maybe when he was younger, he went out and fished, but then later on, he started a company called Pacific Coast Fish Company.
By himself?
No, with two relatives.
Oh, so they also came too.
Uh-huh, a Toyama and a Kondo.
A Toyama and a Kondo?
Mm-hmm.
And your father was the oldest in his family, or what order?
He was the youngest in his family.
And normally, in this particular case, that meant he would have to seek out his own fortune and opportunities as far as a profession or a career?
Probably.
Probably.
And the two men that he started off with in this fishing company were his brother-in-laws.
So they came to California, in Los Angeles,
yes.
Or San Francisco?
San Pedro.
Because
San Pedro is the harbor, you know, where fishing would be taking place.
Were there very many Japanese Americans or Japanese immigrants who first came to that area before your father, or was he one of the
first? I'm not sure, but I think he was one of the early ones. I don't know when Terminal Island began, but of course the larger body of Japanese Americans were living in Terminal Island.
I see.
We were on the other side in San Pedro proper.
So there's two sides?
Yeah, there's the San Pedro proper,
yes.
And then there's a little bay, and then there's Terminal Island across.
And so when your father was fishing, he basically decided that this was where he planned to live for the rest
yes.
of his life?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he planning to return to Japan?
No, I think he planned to live there the rest of his life. I mean, because when the children came, I'm sure he felt we would certainly want to just stay here.
So he decided that this was his
place
mm-hmm. for his children to grow up and be raised.
Right.
Decided to have you mm-hmm. all.
Well, we only had three children.
Three children.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the eldest?
The eldest was my brother, who's 3 years older, Arthur.
Uh-huh.
He passed away 2 years ago. And my twin brother, who's still alive, and he's living in San Jose, California.
I'm sorry to hear about your older brother.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, your father spoke Japanese? Or?
Oh, yes, just Japanese.
He didn't speak any English at all?
No, my mother spoke not a lot of English, but she spoke, well, I guess we spoke Japanese in the house, but she spoke English, I think, better than most Isseis, because she taught English in Japan.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
She was a school teacher?
Yeah, a high school teacher.
Right. What type of family did she come from? Do you know much about your grandparents?
No, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think the man she married, my father, was the son of the Kocho Sensei. The Kocho Sensei is the... You know what?
Like a community leader?
No, Kocho Sensei is the principal of the school. I muffed these lines, I mean, you could take it out, right?
Oh, you could take out anything you
like.
Oh,
okay.
So the cultural sensei basically dictated like flower arrangements and... Or...
Kocho Sensei? No, he's the... wait a minute. He's the principal of a high school.
Oh, of the high school.
Yeah.
Why would they call it a cultural sensei?
I just used a Japanese word.
Oh, okay.
Kocho sensei means
yes.
principal.
Ah, I see.
Oh, you didn't.
I'm not familiar with that term.
Oh. Okay.
That's a new term for me, so excuse me for asking.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe, I hope I'm saying it right. I think it is.
Kocho sensei.
Mm-hmm.
And your father, he was from what type of family? Was it...
I don't know, but if his father was a principal, I guess education was one of the primary things. But I've only known my father as being in fishing.
I see. Was he a type of father that you really got to know, or did you spend much time with your father since
well,
he was fishing?
He liked to play golf, and I used to love to caddy for him. Even in grammar school, the bag was almost as big as me, or bigger, I think it was, and heavy.
And you would carry it.
But it meant so much for me to spend time with him when he would go golfing. So, well, I used to go with him a lot when I was in grammar school, till maybe mid-junior high. And then in junior high school, I started getting interested in tennis, and I just didn't go any longer with my father to go golfing.
Golf was your first sport?
No, tennis was.
I see.
I just went with them it just seemed like something different to do.
Where did you play golf at?
I don't know, it was in our hometown in San Pedro.
Oh.
Yeah, it was near the water.
Must have been beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Were there many houses back then, do you recall?
Many what?
Houses.
No,
farms.
The golf course was between the Japanese farmers, you know, farms, and the cliff. Should I let it go?
Should we? Would you like
Can
to answer
you
it?
Turn it off? He may not mind that we go on for a while, but you are taking a lot of time on details.
Yes,
over
I am.
The little things that
actually come here. It was
1911. I think 1911.
And what was that time period as far as laws in the United States? The Gentlemen's Agreement was basically...
Was 1907 and 1913. I think
the
Gentlemen's Agreement, there were several Gentlemen's Agreement, but
did any
actually
of those
they did not, you know, U.S. did not want workers to come in. I mean, they were still allowing students.
So you could get in as a student, but you could not come in as a worker.
I think they stopped workers from coming in 1907, the agreement. Excuse me, can
sure.
I stop? I need water.
Let you get some water. Manju must be horrible for you.
What?
Mochi or manju?
Well, anything that I have to chew, which is almost everything. Tofu is wonderful.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
You should have brought
because
you tofu then.
Yeah, that's what I need is tofu. Yeah.
Yuri, going back to our questions, I'm sorry that our time frame, we might have to stop at this particular interview when your friend comes.
No, yeah, we could go on for a while. I'll just tell him what to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then anyway, I said I'll give him dinner at some point. It won't be much of a dinner, but I got corn anyway. We could eat.
Oh, that's great. Your father came here during the time after the laws had started changing. Did these laws here in the U.S. affect your family or affect you when you were growing up? Do you remember going to school during the time the gentleman's agreement had just been
Well, I don't think we were aware of the gentleman's agreement. Actually, I didn't know about the gentleman's agreement till I grew up and the, you know, and the Asian American studies came in, you know. And then, of course, from all the students, I would hear, you know, what they were studying. And then, I learned. But I don't think when I was growing up, I knew that there was such a thing called gentleman's agreement.
Oh.
I think it started around 1907, and then 1913, I think they had another gentleman's agreement.
So it was imposed in different ways.
Yeah, Japanese from coming into this country as workers.
Did your father feel any discrimination or pressure having come here?
Oh, I'm sure every Issei did. I mean, it was much different than when we Niseis were starting. Well, we Niseis went through, I'm sure, discrimination and prejudice, but nothing like the Issei's.
So basically, they had to deal with it on a daily basis from the day one when they first
And of course, for most Issei's, I heard those who came in to the West Coast, they couldn't speak English, and the only kind of work they could do was domestic work. Then after they did many years of domestic work, then they went into their own business. I think my relatives first, after they did domestic work, then they felt fishing was what they wanted to get into.
Your father actually bought his boat?
He never had a boat, no.
So he actually borrowed a boat?
No, he never had a boat. He had a fish market.
Oh, I see.
So it's different. Then he probably purchased fish from fishermen, Japanese fishermen who went out. And then he sold the fish to Japanese steamship companies.
In mass quantity.
Well, I don't know about what quantities, but he sold to the Japanese steamship companies.
Oh, and basically you recall seeing him home most of the time, or would you ever go to the market to watch him sell the fish?
Oh yeah, when we were little kids, we'd go to the market, and of course, you know, the Issei's always told us, don't get in our way, and so we didn't go. I mean, we would go to the market, and then we would play outside, and there was even a train tracks, and the trains would come, and we used to have fun throwing nails. I don't know why we did it, but that's what people told us kids were doing, throwing nails when the train would come in.
Uh-huh.
Just so that we would see them get all bent up. I don't know.
And you'd go pick up the nails afterwards.
Yes.
So you had a lot of fun growing up.
Well,
at attraction.
I guess we thought it was fun. I don't think that lasted that long.
What was life like with your family? Did you enjoy
being
with
your
brothers?
Well, we were a close-knit family.
Very close.
And we lived, though, comfortably. And, San Pedro is a... After, if you look in the scrapbook,
yes,
you will see that, I mean, the friends are of all different nationalities and backgrounds.
Many people don't have scrapbooks. How were you able to salvage the scrapbook? Did you want to show any of your pictures in there right now?
Yeah.
Please.
Is it okay?
Can I get it for you?
Let's see, which one? I don't know if it's... This is San
You have
Pedro.
It labeled, too.
And then this one, though, is... I used to teach Sunday school and work with kids, and so these are all the kids I had in class. And then as they grew up, I mean, most of them were white.
You taught in Los Angeles?
San Pedro.
In San Pedro.
I lived only in San Pedro.
Was there a
church? But these are the kids that I had in class, and then they grew up, and then I kept up as long as I could, even though I wasn't, well, I mean, after we went to camp, I guess, I don't know, my mother must have kept everything, because then when I came back and went home for the short while, I put the scrapbook together.
So it's very detailed.
Yeah, it's when they were young, and then when they grew up.
Now, who are the pictures of?
These are all the kids I had in either Sunday school or Girl Reserve or Girl Scouts or, and you can see they're all different nationalities. And
so basically, the friends you grew up with in San Pedro, gamut, the entire range, they were not just all Japanese Americans.
No, but now this one would be all the, this would be more, I mean, my high school, you know, we exchanged pictures and high school graduation pictures and all. And then at the end, I think, oh no, this isn't the one. The Japanese, then after, when I was in camp, I worked with kids too. I did a lot of work with children for, I had literally thousands of kids, I think. And these are the kids.
Oh my gosh,
who,
look at the postcards.
Yeah, the kids, oh yes, these kids were fantastic. And these are the kids. They're all now grandparents, I'm sure.
You must have been a very good teacher.
No, I didn't keep up with them. I mean, it was so much fun working with them.
How old were you when you were a school teacher?
No, I wasn't a school teacher. Well, you know, one of these volunteer Sunday school teachers. Well, from the time I was, from the time I graduated high school, I started working with kids. I love working with kids. So what I did way back then, and what I later have done, just two different. This is in New York.
That's in New York.
This is at Akamatsu's church.
Reverend Akamatsu.
Yeah, but you were too young. You didn't. Was he still alive?
I heard stories about him when I first moved to New York.
Oh, uh-huh. One
so that was the Christian church that was here on Riverside by the Buddhist church.
Uh-huh.
There was a Japanese-American community here
right.
in New York.
And one of the kids I had, well, she became a movie actress. You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jerry Miyazaki. Aiko Herzog's daughter. Oh gosh, I'm.
We have the logistical obstacles here all over.
Oh.
You're, would you like some more water? Can I get you
no.
some more water?
Uh-uh.
You're okay. I'm gonna squeeze through. I'm sorry about this. Okay, I'm gonna turn the mic on again. So you're showing me some of the pictures of some of your Sunday school students.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The time you were in high school, you taught Sunday school, and you kept a scrapbook of all your students.
Yeah,
do you remember
not
each
all
and
the
every
students,
one of
but quite a few of them. What?
You remember each and every one of them?
Well,
I know you have
back
a very
then,
good memory.
No, back then, but I had so many, I couldn't remember. I had Sunday school and Bluebirds and Girl Reserves and Homer Toberman Settlement House. It was my.
So you were very involved even back then.
Gee gosh, I'm ticking, so it must look funny. I can't control this ticking. Maybe if I take my medication.
But that's fine if you want. That's fine.
Because
I don't.
It's gonna. See, I can't cut a mild stroke in March, and it's left me. You know, I mean, well, I can't walk so well,
mm-hmm.
and I have this. Ticking. I don't know if this medication is going to work that fast on me. But when I'm tired, I can't control this. I don't know.
Do you want to rest some right now?
No, that's all right. Mm-mm. No, because the time is going.
Yeah.
No, I don't want you to feel rushed about time because we're going to do two things, Yuri. We're going to come back at your convenience. And what I wanted to do basically was just give you a chance to tell your story because normally you're very generous with your time with many
oh,
people.
Oh no,
from
I don't
the
want
community.
To give that much time.
No.
That's why I thought if you didn't do it with so much detail, because we're not getting.
I can cover quite a bit of ground if you like. If you would like to tell us a little bit about your life, and basically, I'm just trying to get a picture of who you are, because I don't quite know you as well, but I felt a very common bond. I became friends with you very quickly within a short time, if you might say that.
Yeah.
And just seeing some of the community activism that you started, even as a youngster, I'm just amazed. Like, you were in Bluebirds, I was in Cub Scouts. But as a bluebird, you remember the camaraderie and the projects and the birdhouses you would make. And
You're familiar with those words.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but let's see. If you were with the Boy Scouts, well, then the girls would be Girl Scouts. Bluebirds are a little bit different. Or are they younger than the Girl Scouts?
The Bluebirds are younger. They're like the Cub Scouts.
Oh, I see. Cub Scouts are equal to
equal peers.
Oh,
in
I see. Uh-huh. Oh.
I remember we would make birdhouses, or we would do community service projects such as clean people's yards and rake the leaves. But you didn't have leaves to rake in Los Angeles.
No,
the leaves don't change.
Uh-huh. No, we did more arts and crafts.
Oh, you did? You know. What type of arts and crafts did you cut?
Oh, you know, it's almost what they do in grammar school.
Like,
you know, you cut out things and you color.
Paper dolls and
you know,
paintings.
Yeah.
Sand sculptures with different colors.
No, I don't think we did sand sculpture. We did very simple stuff with paper and Crayola. You know, nothing fancy.
You live by the beach, so you're
San Pedro is by the beach, but we didn't walk to the beach. Well, we didn't go to the beach so much. We went. It's a little long for walking. We would go to the parks that were closer by.
I see. They actually had. Back then, I'm not sure, but recently, I guess after when I first moved to Los Angeles back in the 80s, I used to take this boat from San Pedro Harbor. Did they actually have a boat that went to Catalina back then?
Oh, yes, yes.
They did?
Oh, yes.
Did you ever ride it as a youngster, as a youth?
Don't remember, but I know it was very popular.
So you would see people coming and going?
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
That Catalina boat was very popular. People came from all over. I can't remember if we ever went, but I know that there was that boat that went to Catalina from San Pedro.
Did you get excited whenever you see boats in the harbor?
Well, maybe in a way I do. Uh-oh, I think that's...
The Pan American Nikkei Conference.
Oh, really?
He's a very interesting gentleman. He went to school with my cousin under Harry Kitano as grad students.
Wait, who's your...
Uba, she's a professor at Northridge. She teaches ethnic studies.
Oh, does she?
Really?
Asian American studies.
You have a cousin teaching at Northridge?
I have several cousins. I have one who's a professor and chair of the English Literature Department. And then my other cousin, she teaches psychology, Asian American psychology, and
are they all
studies.
Ubas?
Yes.
They're all Ubas? I gotta look them up then, because my girlfriends
Oh, really?
All my girlfriends are teaching at Northridge.
Oh, that's great. And Irene Hirano grew up going to school with my cousin George Uba, who's the professor at English in Northridge.
Oh, wow.
They went to USC together.
Oh, I see. Do you know Bob Suzuki? But he's at a different
I've
school.
I've heard of him before. I've seen some
he's
of his
the
work.
President of a university.
Which one?
Pomona.
Really?
But
there's Pomona College and there's, University of Pomona or something. There's two different, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
But he's at one of the Pomona.
Wow.
You teach at the different universities as a university, or... At select colleges and universities, they ask you and request of you to be a speaker.
You're just a speaker. No, I don't teach it anywhere. But
the
Asian American Student Association asks me. So it's not that I'm there to teach. It's just to give one, not a lecture even. I don't know.
Where did you learn how to speak? So
I can't, and I'm having so much trouble speaking right now. You can see that I'm just going to give up speaking. No, because I'm having problem with my...
Is it really painful?
It's not painful. It's just a pain in the neck. I mean...
It is quite an effort, pain, to just close and use your muscles there to...
Yeah, well, it's just... I don't know why. The saliva just keeps coming down.
Mm.
And it's... That's why I don't... I shouldn't... You know, that I have to keep... wiping and stuff. So I'm in a way when this thing happened to me, the stroke, in a way, it was a to me, it was a relief. What?
It was a relief?
I mean, I knew then, when I first had the stroke, I couldn't even stand up. And I've improved that I could walk around and all. But I don't know. I thought to myself, oh, thank God. I mean, I knew then, I wouldn't be able to do the speaking anymore until I got well, and I canceled all the speaking this year. I'm only doing a couple. I did one at the Marxist School in the summer, and then I'm doing San Francisco State because Angela Davis was gracious enough to say that she would be the MC. So that's where I'm going in a couple of days. Yeah. But that's it, and then I'm calling it quits. And what I'm doing after this, UCLA is giving me this opportunity. I'm writing. But it's not the usual thing. I've been doing all these political stuff, writing, and it'll be totally different. I'm writing a book for my grandchildren.
You are? Children's book?
It's going to be about, it'll be about, Japanese Americans and how they came here and why they came. And it'll be about each one of their, the reason I'm writing is because all my kids have said, your grandchildren won't remember my husband or my daughter who passed away, husband.
This family is a picture of your daughter.
Yeah, who passed away. And so they said, why don't you write a book about the family? And you could even include civil rights and everything, in this book. Understandable to children.
Yes.
And so UCLA, I think, is giving me this opportunity. So I'm just going to quit speaking, and then I'm going to, do this kind of...
So the writing is about your story?
What?
About the people in your life.
Your people in my life, and about, that they should know about the Black movement, the Puerto Rican movement, the American Indian movement, but in a simple way that they could understand. And then that they could understand... then, of course, about the internment years and what the Japanese Americans went through, I'll aim it at about junior high school age, because by the time I finish in a couple of years, some of them will be going into junior high school.
And you feel that's a key target group or age for children to learn about these types of issues?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with so many different issues and organizations? Do you remember?
Well, New York is the kind of place that you will. New York, everything is happening.
Before New York?
Before New York, I was really a small town person. I didn't even know what was happening in the world. But I just love working with kids.
It shows right here with the students that you basically kept in contact with.
I didn't really keep in contact with that. As your life moves on, you have to keep moving on too. So
did you have a lot of role models as a youth?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember any of the parents that would come over to visit
your parents? I had certain teachers that I thought were
Sunday school
exceptional.
Teachers or regular teachers?
Oh, regular teachers. And I went to the... after I finished junior college, I went, it was only for a few months, but I went to the Los Angeles Presbytery, because I was going to a Presbyterian church, but I went to this presbytery. They had classes on how to work with children.
Oh, and where is this located?
In Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, downtown?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And who were some of the people who... This was a school or this was a church?
No, this was
school.
An institute.
Institute.
And the people who enrolled there, oh God, is that, I think it's another student who's, continuing on the schedule. We're not following your...
We're a little off, but that's not concerning. Too much. I'm more concerned about you and, just your ability to spend time with us here. And I don't want you to feel rushed because You've been very helpful in helping us understand
who you are.
But
it's sort of hop, skip, and jump that you're not following.
I really should follow, but I really should follow you.
No.
Because you have kind of...
Oh, gee, I'm jerking.
Role models when you were growing up. Were your parents role models to you?
Oh, my mother definitely was
my
strongest.
Why your mother so much?
What?
Why so your mother?
Well, she was such an open person where, I mean, I never heard her ever make very, you know, small remarks. I mean, she was very open about everybody, and she, no matter who I brought home, she was very gracious to and
very
welcome.
Encouraging.
Yeah.
And
oh,
positive,
yeah.
And she
yeah. And she used to take all of us kids, you know, when we were in high school, she would drive us to the football games.
Oh, she knew how to drive.
Yeah.
When did she learn how to drive?
I don't know. Well, because she had to always drive my father.
She had
my
a
father
car.
Was always in poor health.
I see.
And so my mother used to drive him around. But when we got to high school age and, you know, the football games,
yes.
We'd want to go. Well, she would fill the car up. I mean, all my girlfriends would pile in the car and she would drive us. So
oh, my gosh. During that time, did most people, your friends, parents have cars or did they know how to drive themselves?
No, very few women did. But my mother seemed sort of different that way. And she was very, very close to all of us kids. And she didn't mind anything about nationalities. I could bring home any kind of person home. And, I mean, she was very, very, I thought, broad-minded for Issei woman. And she never told any of us kids, you know, who to go out with or who not to. I mean, I feel very, very fortunate that I had, you know, a mother who... My father was too busy all the time. He was either too busy with work or, you know, we didn't...
You didn't see him on an often enough
no,
basis.
Or and he wasn't feeling that well.
Oh.
Yeah, because he had... Well, he had lung problems.
Did he smoke? Or
I don't
was
know if
it
he even
Polish?
Smoked, but he once had TB. Oh. And at one point, I think he was in the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
So... although he loved to play golf, and he was able to play golf. But, I mean, my mother, well, I felt very close to her, and she was quite an unusual woman, I thought.
Was this typical of most Issei women at the time? You're Nisei, is that right?
Yeah, I'm Nisei.
And
no,
were there
I
very
thought she
many...
was quite different from most Issei women. And then maybe, too, I was lucky that she could speak English.
Were there many Japanese in the community, many other Issei women that your mother knew? Friends?
No, not that many. My aunt lived in the same block, and so...
They did things a lot together.
Oh, together, yeah. You know.
Did she drive too?
No. Uh-huh.
But your mother drove, she
yeah.
did everything. She cooked for you too?
Oh, yeah, she did. Yeah, she did a lot, but she really got along with all of the friends of my brothers and I.
So she was quite popular among your peers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And even when we went to camp, she helped me so much. I mean, I was working with the kids, and she would help me with the kids. And then when we started all the, you know, the kids started writing to the Nisei soldiers.
Yes.
My mother was writing to all the Nisei soldiers, too.
The postcard you talked about, A Day of Remembrance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, she did so many things. And then she became one of the chaperones for the USO. And so she would go even to Camp Shelby, you know, when the young girls would go to dance there. She would go there, you know, as a chaperone.
Oh, she would. Would she actually do any dancing herself?
Oh, no. Gosh, no.
But she was quite a role model for her time.
Oh, yeah, I think so, definitely.
And
yeah.
Basically you did
and
you
my age, you know, the gals I hung out with,
yes.
The USO girls, they became very close to my mother. That when I left camp, they became almost her kids too. After I was gone, they would be seeing her a lot in camp.
Oh, really? How old were you when you went to camp, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, yeah, I was 21.
21. So you had just finished high school and you were basically...
No, I just finished
junior college.
So I was 21.
Where did you go to junior college?
Where?
Yes.
Compton Junior College.
Compton. So did you drive yourself then?
I had a twin brother, and so we were very, very close because we grew up together. We were in the same grade all the way through. When we were young, he used to put me on the handlebars of the bike, and we'd go to school, you know, I'd be riding the handlebars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were really close. Although the last 50 years, I don't think we've hardly talked, sadly. And here, this time when I'm going to California, I hope there's time.
You'll
Every time I've gone, there wasn't time to even talk to him.
San Jose, doesn't
Yeah, but he's such a workaholic that there hasn't been time to talk.
Oh, my God.
But his wife is very, very warm, and always, when I go there, she's so good about cooking for us and inviting other old friends. But I hope I get to see my brother this time.
Just spend time with him.
Yeah, because we're both getting on in years, and if we don't talk soon, we'll never have a chance to.
Do you ever ask him or talk to him about who his role models were and basically...
Oh, gosh.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Stop here again.
See.
Oh, no problem. You stay where you are.
Oh.
You stay where you are. You're fine. You're going to tell me a little bit
about
your brother.
Oh, yeah, the picture. Yeah. This picture. Because,
now,
I have never, if you know, I've never told anyone else that I was not in service in, what is it, the WACS. But there was a group before the WACS called WADCA. Women's Ambulance and Defense Corps of America.
And what was
before
that?
The war.
Before the war started.
Yeah, and so I joined that. That's
oh, you did. So you were in the armed services then.
Well, but then I wasn't exactly in the armed services. If you were in the armed services, you were, you know, you were getting paid. It was before the WACS.
So you were like a nurse then.
Not a nurse.
Not a nurse.
Women's Ambulance and Defense Corps of America. We went there to become ambulance drivers.
You did?
Yeah, but that's not being a nurse. No, we took up motor mechanics and... Well, what happened was there were four Japanese Americans in this group that I was in San Pedro.
Do you remember their
One
names?
From, yeah, uh-huh. I hope their names come back to me. Francis Ishuing from Terminal Island.
Yes.
Mary Kobata from Palos Verdes Hill. And I think her name was Yuri Takahashi, something like that, from Wilmington, and I, the four of us. And no officer complained because we were Japanese, except one. I don't know if he was an officer, but he was a teacher.
What year was this?
This is before the war began, just before the war, 1940. Mm-hmm. And
why did the one officer complain?
Well, he was teaching Morse code, and he said, I don't want any Japanese in this class. He was German, too, you know, and yet...
So he had the nerve to
yeah.
say that.
Mm-hmm. And yet, none of the other teachers that we had, we took up. What do you call it? First aid teacher didn't feel any, you know, didn't feel that, you know, as if they couldn't trust us. And we took motor mechanics, and that teacher didn't feel, you know, he didn't feel uncomfortable with Japanese in his class. But just that
just
German
this
teacher,
one guy.
Yeah, who was teaching Morse code, and so. When we heard that he didn't want us in there, we felt, well, maybe there are others, you know, and even those who are officers. These were teachers. I don't know if teachers were officers. And so the four of us got together and said, okay. I mean, I was just the opposite of what I became later on, where I would have really challenged them and all if I had become political, but I wasn't political at all, and I didn't want to make waves at that time. And I thought, well, the four of us, when we got together, we decided, let's just be nice about it, gracious about it, and just quietly leave.
You think that's more of a Japanese trait?
Oh, yeah, sure it is, of course. She's even shaking her head. Yeah, and so that's what we did.
So
but we were once in the Wadka, and we were really proud to be in Wadka.
May I take a look at it?
Yeah.
A little closer? So this is a picture of you and your brother.
Yeah, and I guess when this was taken, well, I was probably still in it before we had to go to camp, because my brother did not, you know, did not join the service until the war broke out, and then he quit school. He was going to UC Berkeley. He quit school and came back home and joined, and went to the draft board, and they accepted him. And a lot of people are so surprised. They said, here, your father was taken by the FBI, and he's being held, and yet at the same time, here, your brother comes along, goes to the draft board, and they accepted him. So I guess it depends on the draft board.
So he had gone to the draft board?
After the war broke out, right after the draft board, the war broke out.
But many, many Japanese Americans were not accepted, even if they volunteered right after the war started.
Right.
Wasn't that the
case? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How was he accepted so readily?
Well, I think one reason was we had been living in that town, you know, for a long time.
So they knew him.
Yeah. And
there's
even though my father was taken by the FBI, still they trusted him and they let him go into the service.
When your father was taken, it was within months of the time he actually went into the Corps then. This was the Army?
The Army. And my father was taken right on December 7th.
Right on the day of Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
Do you recall the incident?
Yeah.
Were you eating lunch or dinner? Well,
1,300 Issei's were taken in the first 48 hours.
Oh my gosh. So all your father's friends?
No, he was the only one from our whole hometown.
Why was he taken? Why was he targeted?
Yeah, everybody used to ask that question. How come your father and our family seemed like such a red, white, and blue American family? But first of all, the group after this Issei group.
Yes.
The first real group that they took were all the fishermen, because the fishermen knew the Pacific waters, and they were afraid that if Japan ever did cross the ocean and came so close to American shores, that the Japanese fishermen living in America might be working, you know, hand in glove with the Japanese. And
in
so,
cahoots.
Oh yeah, say. That's why they took the Japanese in so quickly. But everybody used to ask me, how come they took your father? Well, I don't know, about 30 years later, there was a book that came out. I think it was called Betrayal of a Race. And I don't know if you've ever seen that book.
No,
but in that book, I was so surprised to read that about my father. I think
your father's name was in the book.
Yeah, but I think they interviewed my twin brother, who said that he thinks it's because when my father was young, he went to school with, I think, Nomura, who became the Japanese attaché who went to D.C.?
Yes.
You know, when the war broke out?
Right.
They happened to come from the same town.
The same Machi.
Well, Machi is street in that town. I don't know.
The same Ken, I guess.
Yeah, same Ken.
Where did your father come from? Which Ken?
Iwate Ken.
Iwate Ken? That
my mother came from Fukushima Ken.
Are they close
Ken, and they're next to each other.
Is that southern Japan or middle Japan? Where in Japan?
It's a little bit north, but not way up north, but it's north, you know, of Tokyo, at least. I don't know the map of Japan that well to know, but it's sort of northern Japan.
Were they a samurai family, you think?
No, I don't know what they were.
You don't know?
No.
They just knew each other from the towns next door.
What?
They just knew each other from the towns next door.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Right. So basically, when your father was picked up, do you remember what you were doing at the time?
Oh, yeah.
Were you eating lunch, or was
that?
No,
I had just come back. Yeah, Sunday.
His breakfast.
I had just come back from, you know, from the Sunday school.
Yes.
I had taken all the kids home. Usually after class, And they were all white kids. I would drive them all home. They used to love to pile into the car, and then I'd take them home one by one.
In San Pedro.
Yeah.
In the Harbor
and then
City
I came
area, right
home,
down off of Western.
And about 10 minutes after I came home, three tall men were in front of our, well, were at the house, knocking on the door, and I went, and they asked for Seichi Nakahara, that's my father.
Well, when you answered the door?
Yeah, and they showed me their FBI card, and I said, oh, my father is sick, but he's sleeping in the back, and they weren't even listening to him. They just walked in, they went to his bedroom, and told him to dress up, to put on his slipper and a bathrobe. He didn't change or anything, he just was in his pajamas and they took him out.
How did that make you feel when they walked right into your house?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't know what the heck was going on. I called my mother, who was just down the street at my aunt.
Were you scared, so you went running to go get
your mother? Yeah, well, I couldn't imagine why this happened. And then my mother came home and she started making phone calls. And it took us a few days before we found out where they had taken him.
So no notice was given where he was or where he was taken to?
No, but you know, all the Japanese were calling each other up. We called people to tell them that Pop was taken. Did anything happen in your family? In San Pedro, we heard he was the only one.
Oh,
but then it
gosh.
Was happening all over Southern California and probably Northern California.
How did they determine who to pick up and who not?
Well, I'm sure you've read enough of the books that
yes.
came on. They said they picked up people like Japanese school teachers, Japanese who were teaching martial art, Japanese businessmen, Japanese community leaders, also people who might have given money to Japan. And a lot of Japanese gave money, and the only place they gave money to was the Red Cross. But all those people, I think, were picked up. But anyway, 1,300 were picked up in the first 48 hours.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, here with Pearl Harbor being bombed, I mean, an enemy coming so close to, it wasn't quite the United States, but it was certainly close enough, and they were attacking the Navy.
So
of course the U.S. government and all the American people are going to be, well, there's going to be hysteria.
Did you consider the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor a horrible incident at
the
time?
Well, of course.
And so you would consider the situation that occurred as being quite unfortunate then?
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you thought of the Japanese as being the enemy. And so did
I mean, I felt more as an American,
time.
Of course.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't feel Japanese. I mean, I'm of Japanese background, of Japanese ancestry, but that didn't make me, you know, I mean, I was still an American. And no matter how angry the U.S. government would feel towards not only the Japanese in Japan, but even transferring that anger here, I don't think I ever thought America would think of putting Japanese Americans in concentration camps.
So that was inconceivable. You never thought that it would go that far after.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure that most Japanese Americans felt that way. They wouldn't believe that. Well, because nothing like that had happened before, or we thought nothing like that had happened. But it shows how little we knew about America's treatment of American Indians, America's treatment of blacks, America's treatment of anyone of color. So it was really a learning.
Could you feel the discrimination changing as you were growing up from youth to junior high school to high school?
Well, I didn't feel discrimination in school at all, but when the war broke out, of course.
Where did you go to school? You went to school?
In San Pedro.
In San Pedro your whole life, mostly.
Oh, yeah. And I loved it there.
You liked the other kids?
I think we were treated very well.
Yes.
Yeah, the kids were good and the teachers were good.
And
oh,
in
yeah.
high school you really enjoyed your friends
more
because you had a chance to do...
Oh yeah. Well, San Pedro is that kind of a place. I mean, it's very, everybody is very close to one another.
It's a nestled community that's in the valley, you might say, right there by the harbor, right?
No, but what brought San Pedrans together,
yes,
is that if you ever lived in San Pedro, you would be a sports fan.
Oh, really?
And you would. Everybody in San Pedro supports the high school team.
So everyone came out for the football games.
Oh, gosh, I've
basketball.
Never seen a town like San Pedro. And in a way, you feel, a part of the town because of this whole thing, for the San Pedro high school team.
Were you
I think
a cheerleader
it's wonderful.
Too?
No, I wasn't a cheerleader, but I certainly made every game, anything, whether it's football, basketball, baseball.
What was your favorite sport? All of them?
Yeah, all of them. But I liked, actual participating, I guess, tennis. And then,
were you on the girls' tennis team then?
No, there was no girls' tennis team, but I played a lot of tennis, mostly with those who were on the boys' tennis team. But San Pedro was a very, very sports-minded town, and it brought the whole community together. And I think that's one thing I liked about it so much.
Did your brothers Art and Peter play
Well, my
sports?
Brother Art was in very poor health all his life. He had asthma. So he could never, but he was a tremendous sports fan. He used to go to all the games of his time, and he used to drive people to the games all the time. My twin brother was in good health, so he went out for football. He was in B football. He wasn't that big to be in varsity.
So
but
all the American sports were very, very good at drawing the people together and gravitating everyone.
And I was lucky that the sports editor of our town, let me write minor sports like tennis, weightlifting, boxing. I couldn't write any major sport like baseball, football, but unless it was anything but varsity, because their regular writers would be writing them up. But afterward, you could see, I have only one clipping where.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I think. But even in here, you could
this
see.
This is a clipping of your writing?
No.
You were a newsletter reporter.
But I
oh,
did
that's
do.
A picture of you.
Yeah, they did a welcome home for me.
Can I get that for you?
Once. I wanted to show this one. Let's see.
Oh, sorry.
Is it in here? Or maybe it's in that other one. Oh, maybe it's in.
But this is a picture of you, right?
Yeah, they have.
In an import firm's bike. This was in June 7th, 1984.
Oh, this is the editor who gave me the opportunity to write, and he even wrote an article. Sports editor who wrote it.
Oh, so you submitted things to him, or?
Oh, when I first.
Oh, that's your name in there.
Yeah. No, I was writing sports from the time I was 16. He let me, I wrote him a letter when I was 16 saying that here San Pedro has some of the greatest tennis players in the country, and yet people right here in San Pedro don't know about it. And then he said, do you want to write something on the tennis matches? And so he said, show me if you could do it, and if I'll see if I'll accept your stuff. And then he let me. So from 16, I was writing for the San Pedro Newspile.
You were?
Sports. Yeah, I love sports.
So he was impressed with your writing.
Oh, I couldn't write. I wasn't a writer.
Well,
at 16, my heavens, no. But just,
but
you
covered
just
the
sports.
Stories. You
no,
covered
but
the
you
sports
know, just
events.
The, you know, just embarrassed. I was. You don't have to be a writer to write,
But
just
it's
sports.
Still, you would have to enjoy the sport, and you would have
oh, yeah,
to enjoy
yeah.
observing
oh,
it.
Oh, I love, yeah. sports and working with kids was my life then.
Wow. So,
oh, of course that's changed completely, because then as I grew older, I had other interests, you know, and then now the sports, and though I still like working with kids, but I'm working with older kids, you know. I used to work with very young kids.
Yes.
Went up from young kids up to high school, and now I'm working with, you know, a lot of college kids.
Basically, you work with, well, with all different age groups, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, and then I did teach 9 years of English conversation at Riverside Church, so I had all kinds of students from all over the world, which was a wonderful experience.
Wow.
And the age range was wide, even up to people in the 70s, and even as young as 12, 13, 14, well, most of them were 20, 30, 40 on up, but I had a couple of young ones.
How did you become so interested in writing or telling stories? Or did you take formal English classes in education? I mean, in elementary school?
No, but what I taught foreign students, so many of those foreign students were taking English at Columbia University, you know, spending a heck of a lot of money, and yet they couldn't really speak, you know, converse. And so then when I heard that there was a program where they teach students how to speak,
yes,
you know, converse, I said, oh, gee, I want to try to get into that kind of stuff and teach. And what I did, I got one of the best books I've ever found on that.
What is it?
This book is a book that has all these almost, help me with the word, I don't want to use the word slang, but you know, American English has so much slang. What's the word for another word?
Idioms.
A better
idioms.
Word for slang. What, idiom? Idioms. Yeah, idiom. Mm-hmm. So I got this wonderful book on idioms, American idiom, and that's what I taught to the foreign students.
And they really appreciate you being
Yeah, because
able to
we use so
language.
Many, you know, idioms, and a lot of times you can't find that, you know, in other books or teachings.
No,
so.
You can't. Especially if it's so formal that people will think, when am I ever going to use this again?
Right. And then you have to sort of learn black slang, because, you know, the black people, when they say something is bad, they don't mean it's bad, they mean it's good. Right. You know, that you have to learn those things. And when someone invites someone to a crib, you know, it's not a baby crib, you invite them to the home, you know. Where Asians might say, I want you to come to my pad.
Yes.
But blacks don't use pad, they use strip, you know.
So the vernacular and colloquialism is quite
Yeah,
different.
And so I said, if you live in New York, you're going to have to learn the colloquialism of that area.
How many languages do you speak? You speak
no, I don't
different
speak
cultural
any, no,
languages?
I don't. But it was really fun. I mean, I had students from all over the world. And they got along so well with each other.
They enjoyed being together as a group in class.
Oh, they were young. Whether they came from Sweden or Korea or, you know, I mean, England or Japan or where, everybody got along well.
So it sounds like a rich experience for yourself as the
teacher,
too.
Oh, yeah.
You really got along well.
Family,
so to speak. Wow. How did you get so impassioned about speaking and before people? Didn't you ever get nervous?
No. I like people. I don't do anything well. I'm not skilled at anything, and I didn't learn how to do anything.
But
if you like people, I mean, you know, you just do what you think. You know.
I've heard you speak on so many platforms.
Yeah, right now I'm having trouble just speaking.
Oh no, but I'm amazed with the ideas that come so fluently to you that many of us have a very difficult time putting into a context, or at least helping to speak in behalf of somebody else. People who've been, you know, perhaps victimized, or people who have been marginalized in society, and yet you take the time to speak the context and to speak out.
Soon, I don't think I'm going to be able to speak. I tell you, I'm having problems now.
Write and you maintain the ideas that people before you and people around you have been a part of your rich life. Like over here, I keep noticing each time I come that you have a new collection of teddy bears. And I mean, it shows
the teddy bear family has grown. Yeah, we consider the bears, you know, part of the family. Yeah.
Do you have a name?
And they all have a name. Yeah, they're named after whoever brought the bear here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're all, yeah, they all, yeah.
Do some of them have the same names?
No, except one person has given me so many bears. I mean, usually if someone named Linda would give me a bear, it'd be Linda. I mean, the name is Linda, then it would be Linda Bear. Laura Bear, because Laura Chan gave it to me. I mean, all of them have a name. Stevie Bear. Gosh, I can't even think of all the bears. The black bear, though, is...
this one here.
Yeah.
Next to the red bear.
What's the bear's name? It's named after the husband and wife. Feishu, is it? Well, I have part of the husband's name and part of the wife's name.
Come on.
But that bear is from a rather famous person. Maybe you've heard of Pharoah Saunders,
yes.
The musician. He and his wife gave me that one. And the next one, the names are, I mean, that bear next to the black bear is Shelrick, because it was, the woman's name was Shelley, and the guy's name was Rick. So we put the names together. But every bear has a name.
And you've got photographs, so many photographs. It's, different
and
images.
See the bear over there, the big one?
The brown?
The yellow bear? The big yellow bear. There, it's got a hat on, I think. That one, though, it wasn't given to me by the person. But we named it after, you know, Ennis Cosby was killed?
Yes.
And he was, like, part of our family.
That was so sad when we heard about that.
Oh, we couldn't believe it.
Did you know Ennis?
Oh, yeah, because he went with my granddaughter for about 5 years.
He did. So
he
was part of your family.
He was part of the family.
He gave that to you.
No, but he did. I went out to look for a bear that would remind me of Ennis, because he used to be here a lot. And that bear, of all the bears I've seen, I thought that one really looked like Ennis. And that bear has that friendly look.
I was going to say he's very friendly looking. He's got that smile on his face and he can cheer up a crowd.
Yeah.
He was a teacher too, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a wonderful teacher. He himself was dyslexic, so he wanted to devote his life to teaching dyslexic children.
And that was his mission.
Yeah, and then that had to happen to him. I mean, sad.
Within the short time, this last year, it's been very hard on you, hasn't it? You're very close friends like Malcolm X's wife.
Oh, his wife, Betty.
Betty Shabazz. And the horrible, horrible incident that occurred to one of your best friends. And the tragedy in the whole family that has just surmised itself to this point.
Oh, the daughters, I mean, it's going to take them a while to get over.
Did you know the grandson, too?
No,
you didn't
know the grandson, but...
She was taking care of him, and she was still
teaching.
No,
the grandson now is in a youth home in Massachusetts. But last week, Julia Wright, the daughter of Richard Wright, gave me a book called Black Boy to give to Malcolm Shabazz. And so I just sent it to him through Percy Sutton. But did you read Black Boy?
No, I have not.
In the first few pages, it starts off where the kid was about the same age as Malcolm. And he starts a fire in his grandmother's home. And it's almost like what happened to Betty. But the grandmother doesn't die in the book Black Boy.
Yes.
But of course in real life, in Malcolm's life, his grandmother died. But what a horrible way.
So he's named after his father, Malcolm.
Right, grandfather.
Grandfather, excuse me.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now, you knew Malcolm X pretty well, and he was one of your closest friends at the time.
Yeah.
And you shared many experiences.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me just bring the scrap. Is it okay
sure,
if I get the scrap?
Sure, please do. Can I help you carry it?
No, I want you to see from Bill took that picture of Malcolm. That wonderful.
Your husband Bill took that.
Yeah.
That's a nice
it was
picture.
In the,
where was it taken?
This was taken
year?
In the kitchen in 1964.
Your kitchen here?
Yeah, he
here
came
on
here.
126th Street in Harlem. Mm-hmm.
He came here just to meet the three writers that came with the Hiroshima Nagasaki World Peace Study Mission.
That was back in the 60s, wasn't it?
Right. Uh-huh. I want to show you.
So he took the time to meet other people of other colors and other countries.
Oh, yeah. This is Betty. Doesn't she look gorgeous here?
Oh, that's Betty's picture.
Yeah, when she was
young. Do you
young.
Know what year that was taken?
Well, it had must have been around 64, too.
She's a beautiful lady.
Yeah. And these are the postcards that he sent.
Some of them are from different parts of the world.
They're from
Egypt.
9 different countries. There's 11 postcards. But the one, the postcard I like the best is the one where he writes.
All right, I appreciate that.
Oh, wait a minute, I wonder. Oh, here's, these are the Hiroshima Nagasaki World Peace Study Mission people.
They came here as a delegation?
Yeah. They wanted to meet Malcolm more than any other person in America. Wait, but there was a postcard I wanted to show you. Where is that one? Gosh, I can't find it. Oh, this one. Still trying to travel and broaden my scope since I've learned what a mess can be made by narrow-minded people. Malcolm was continuously changing. And this is where...
When you say Malcolm was changing, oh my gosh. That was the day at the Audubon Theater.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's you holding
yeah.
him.
Mm-hmm.
What a horrible, horrible thing.
You could see how many times he was hit. Because it was a shotgun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Why would anyone think of doing such a horrible thing?
Why? This American government wanted him killed. Look at all those years that they done everything but actually pull the trigger. And they, well, most black people feel it didn't matter who pulled the trigger. It was America wanted him.
It was the oppression of the times and still is.
No, it is. Well, Malcolm challenged America too much. I mean, America is not a country that likes to have people speak out in such condemnation of this country.
I see.
So, of course, they didn't like Malcolm. And it doesn't matter who actually pulled the trigger. They never, ever even got the right people who did it. You know, 3 of them who went to prison all those years, they weren't even there.
So in other words, you were there at the time when this happened. Do you remember who, I mean, they indicted the wrong people, basically. They just chose people randomly to put on trial.
Yeah, and they put them on trial, and here the courts found those people guilty when they've always said they weren't there. But, and they have never come out, I mean, actually, the government knew
who did it.
Well, I don't know if you'd say that they're going to ever admit to who did it, but even Bill Kunstler had the names of the people who were actually involved in it. It was on the front page of the Amsterdam News. Look at the case of Geronimo Pratt,
yes.
The brother who just got out after doing 27 years in prison. I mean, they knew he didn't kill that woman on a tennis court in Santa Monica when he was up in Oakland area. And yet he spent all those years in prison. they lied, they did such a cover-up that they were able to frame Geronimo Pratt.
And
but finally,
they,
he's
the
out.
The government did?
What?
Was the government frame-up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's finally come out as such. So, but that also happened to a Panther brother here, Duruba bin Wahad.
Uh-huh.
He did 19 years, and finally the government or the FBI and the police had to own up to what had really happened.
And these were human beings. These were real people.
Oh, yeah, these are real people. And that's what's happening. And see the guy there,
yes.
Mumia Abu-Jamal, the same thing is happening to him. Yeah.
Now, there's a story or a documentary that's occurring in Philadelphia about the houses that were burned as a result.
Yeah. And he supported him. That's what they didn't like. The MOVE family.
Yes.
Yeah. And he supported the MOVE, and that's one of the reasons why he became a target, and also the fact that he was a Panther member. And they certainly didn't like Panthers.
So innocent people were affected in the
wake
of this entire situation.
Because the newspapers and those in power have criminalized a lot of people who were in the movement, especially in radical groups like the Panther Party. And right now we're trying to get Asian Americans to become more supportive of political prisoners. Two of the phone calls were the same person.
Yes.
And it's an Asian American who feels that we gotta all work harder to get Asian Americans out to support political prisoners.
I see.
And so I'm so glad that finally we're getting to that point where we're going to be doing a lot of organizing.
You're the head of the David Wong Commission or Committee, and to free him.
Well, there's a group that's been supporting David Wong for quite a while, and that group.
What has taken place so far as up to this point?
David Wong is another case where he absolutely could not have killed the person that they accused him of doing.
So he was indicted.
But because he could not speak English that well, he was an easy target to be scapegoated, and I feel that he was also framed. But since 1990, we've had committees, we've had members, not always the same people, but the committee has been going on for 7 years to see if we could get that case back in court.
I see. Last year I attended one of the dinners.
Yes, thank
Masa
you for doing it.
Court.
Yes.
And I know this coming year I had a chance to meet some of the people. One of them is a young lawyer whose wife is Japanese.
Oh,
and
who's that?
I forget his name now.
Who's
he was going to school at Rutgers, and he grew up in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah. Elliot Monteverdi.
Yes, Elliot Monteverdi.
Oh, you met him?
And I helped work with him on a conference on racial injustice.
Oh.
And basically the first multicultural law review forum that came out here at Rutgers back in May. Dennis Hayashi, he was...
Oh, really?
Dr. Shalala came to speak. He was on the panel.
Oh, really?
And it was quite some interesting discussion. One of the people who was on that panel is the senior editor for the National Review.
Oh,
He was the one who wrote Alienation, a book that says quite some not so favorable things about immigration and about the way new immigrants are portrayed, especially those coming from the Pacific Asian Rim.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I'm sure you heard a lot about the protest. I attended that protest.
October 12th of last year?
Right, the National
But it was
Review.
Mostly...
That's horrible.
Latinos, no? The one in D.C.?
This was
October 12th last year?
This was the one that came out in March. The March National Review, showing the Asian Oriental features of Clinton, his wife Hillary, and
Yeah.
With the fundraising scandal, it has not been easy for Asians to to prevent such stereotypes from over
Overexposure
and time.
Oh, so you went to the demonstration here in New York?
Yes.
Oh. Uh-huh.
But it seems like, you know, to continue in any position as a committee organization head, you're always rallying troops, and you're always writing letters, you're always developing campaigns to get more people publicly educated. And it's a never-ending job. Where do you find your energy and the time to plan and organize?
Oh no, it's the people who are involved, and so of course you can't help them. Oh, okay, good. I'm glad you happened to be here to catch that.
So you're always meeting people to help organize these groups and to help speak.
I'm just part of the people who are doing it. I mean, there's no exact leader or anything like that. Everybody works together.
But you have helped
so
network people here
yeah,
in the community.
Yeah, network people.
Get them to meet each other and to start thinking about ways in which to pursue.
Right. Wait a minute. I'm looking at... Ooh, I didn't know it was this late.
Right. I think we're going to finish up here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do is...
I know you don't have much time. Oh, yeah. Help yourself to whatever there is to drink. But I'll cook right away. Okay?
Yuri, I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time to prepare. I know, you know, your tight schedule and all, you spent so much time preparing for our arrival, and I'm sorry that we arrived late. We started here at 4:30, actually close to 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And your friend here has been very patient, and I think we infringed on his time. So I do want to make up this time to both you and him. And if there's anything we could do on behalf of Lori Nagel and Sumi Koyeda, who's the education chair, I just want to say thank you very much for having us here in your, nice home.
Thank you for coming. You folks are busy, my goodness, and having to bring all the equipment. Okay, I'm going to have to cut here.
Thank you.